Hey, I'm Daniel Colburn.
And I'm Caleb Porzio.
Welcome to 20% Time, where two coworkers discuss one programming topic every Friday for less than 20 minutes. I'm using my big cup.
Wow.
I don't know how gross these are going to sound.
Big
I'm
day.
I'm probably going to cut all that. Yeah, but yeah, I'm using my Loyola University New Orleans alumni cup. I'm not one, but I've got the cup. It's a big cup.
Got the big cup. Is it as big as the Titan cups? The Titan mugs?
That's a mug. This is more of a cup.
Right, but...
I would say this is two-thirds of a liter.
Two-thirds of a liter. And the Titan mugs are at least a full liter. At least two.
No.
Two or three. At least
The Titan mug is maybe half a liter. I would say half a liter.
Half liter?
Maybe a third of a liter, honestly.
I bet it's at least half a liter. Straight up.
I'd take that wager.
All right. Decole. Tell me, you were a philosophy major in college.
It's true.
Right?
Guilty as charged.
And so, basically, you know about philosophy, right?
Somewhat. I did not graduate, but yes,
okay.
Go on.
Who graduates? Not me.
No one.
No one. So, we've been talking micro decisions. We've talked micro decisions on the show.
We have talked
decision making. Something that I think is something worth thinking about. And I guess, okay, the history, you know, I'm programming along and you just step aside or like, one day I had to implement like a modal or something super simple. And it took me like, I don't know, like 20 minutes. And when I was done with it, I just stopped and realized how tired I was. And I was like, just mentally exhausted. I was like, I just stepped back and realized how many decisions I've probably made in the last 20 minutes putting a freaking bootstrap modal on a page. And so I backtracked and I wrote it all down in Bear, like every single decision I had to make. And it was this giant list of things from like, you know, okay, where do you put the modal, you know, like the modal DOM, like do you put it next to the button that fires the modal? Do you put it at the bottom of the page? Do you put it in the next tag? Like, there's all these things. Like, I don't know if these decisions actually matter. They don't change the output of the thing I'm building, at least apparently, but there's still decisions that have to be made, and I have to weigh out these things constantly, you know? And it's just exhausting.
And there's the potential that they could matter, which is why you have to think hard.
Right, in that, exactly. And in that case, like, that's something that I guess could actually matter, like, technically, but there's other things that You kind of know the whole scope of the decision, and you're still kind of like, I don't know what to do. I want to be consistent, but I also want to make the best decision in this instance. And there's that tension, and there's all of these tensions that just, you're just torn up all day, you know, when you're writing code, you're just, and so my thought was, if I logged every decision I ever had to make, we could probably sit down and group them into like some basic things. Like, here's a time where you could basically like develop a framework for making your own decisions.
For logical decision making.
So I was like, wouldn't that be great if I could like refer to my personal framework that I've developed and say, okay, this is a point where I'm preferring consistency over the proper thing because of these factors, or I'm grouping something by type instead of by domain term, or I'm favoring like aesthetics over semantics, or
may I interject with an anecdote from the history of philosophy?
Do it.
All right. So there was a group of British people, well, not exclusively British, but primarily British people, and this group was called the Logical Positivists, and they were the people involved in a movement called Logical Positivism. Okay. Which was a branch of analytic philosophy, which was very big in England because they're all very proper and and analytic philosophy basically was based on the idea that all philosophy is language, like that the differences in ideas, like they kind of had this idea that all people actually have the same ideas, they just use different language.
Right. Okay.
And so all philosophical disagreements and all philosophical arguments and logical disagreements are because of flawed communication and flawed language. And so basically, a variety of people, including Wittgenstein and Bertrand Russell at various points. Anyway, there's a whole group of people who had basically attempted to create a logically perfect language where you could not say something that could be misunderstood.
Like Ruby.
Right, just like Ruby. I think it's more like Haskell.
Right.
You know,
right.
Isn't that the whole thing?
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
But anyway, so they're trying to create like Haskell in, you know, 1893 in, you know, Oxford. But they their whole deal was like, if only I could like create a strong enough framework for, they wouldn't say decision making, they would say like communication or debate, but basically decision making. Right.
Yeah.
If only I could create like a strong enough framework for decision making or debate, the whole problem would be solved. Then there would be no more philosophy. Everyone would just be communicating about the ideas they obviously agree on because they're the natural way of things. And then everything would be good.
Right. So, guess I'm maybe I'm looking for that. I don't think I'm looking for the end all be all way of writing software. I'm looking for my way, but knowing my way. So I was expressing this to my friend John Van, who's been mentioned on the show. He's the visualstudio.net guy. And
Right.
So I was talking to him about this, and he's like, isn't philosophy, like, isn't the whole point of philosophy to make decisions? And I'm like, I have no idea. I don't know what philosophy is at all. And so he's like, yeah, I think that, like, is actually some sort of formal definition. And he's taken a couple courses in philosophy in college, but I think he was an engineer. But anyway, so he like knows a lot more than me, and sort of like we were getting pretty excited. And so I was like, all right, this is what's up, philosophy. Like maybe instead of micro decisions and decision making and all that, maybe the term is philosophy of code, and maybe philosophy's already like done a bunch of this stuff, and we should start there. So then I talked to my buddy D. Cole. And, oh, this is hilarious. Dude, I was like, I don't know if I can, like, pull it back up, but I didn't want to prime you, so I was just like, what's your definition of philosophy? And you're like, oh, boy. And then I'm just going through the Slack thing, and then you were like, but generally, I was like, well, why do you need it? Why do you use philosophy? And you're like, well, generally it relieves a heavy pressure behind my eyes. And
yeah,
right.
That's true.
And I'm sitting there thinking, like, I'm getting this big smile, like, ooh, this is good. And then I'm like, okay, are there other reasons? And then you're like, there are people who practice philosophy to dominate dominate other people with it. And I'm like laughing because I'm picturing this applied to code, and, you know, seeing the parallels. And and then there's people who have to be philosophers doing philosophy so that they can like help the people who are dominated. And then, like, sometimes you need to convince people you're a smarty at a party. And then we got into, like, other crazy things about epistemology and knowing if you know things and crazy other, like, philosophy things. So,
yes.
Anyway, so I've been digging into philosophy in my spare time just for fun. And most of it has turned into, like, not anything valuable to code, just mostly, like, how to know I exist and stuff.
Yep. But which is useful to code.
Well, yeah, so that's interesting. So when I was talking to you about this, when I revealed that my motive was code philosophy, you said you had sort of brought up, like, you were like, okay, with code, like why do you write code? Or like what, like the decisions you make when you're writing code. You basically brought it back to like, is it because we love to code? Do we do the things we do because we love to code? Do we do them because, you know, like generally in America, we have to make clients happy. That's why we're doing this. So because we need money. And so making them happy, and like, we had sort of this, and that opened my mind to like, okay, so at some level, the decisions I make when I'm programming are rooted in like actually really deep things that I just assume, like we just say writing code for maintainability, right? Like,
right.
That is a loaded statement, right? Like,
right.
like,
well, so yeah, and there's like stuff behind that too, and like we kind of talked about this earlier, but like writing code for maintainability means a couple of things, right? So if you are, so there's three people in a given relationship, right? There's like the current programmer, right? Like the person who is writing code today,
yep.
Right?
Yeah.
And then there's the client or the product owner or the, you know, marketing team or whoever is receiving that code as a product, right?
Yep. Yep.
And then there is the mythical future developer, right?
Yep.
Who usually is a real person, but sometimes doesn't end up existing.
Right.
And so those three people all have certain values, mm-hmm. right? And because the future developer is never in the room when the values are being discussed, one of those two other parties has to take it on themselves to be the advocate of the future developer,
mm-hmm.
right?
Right.
And I think, I have a theory, at least, that the future developer is used as a stick to bludgeon with in a capitalist exchange between developer and product owner. And I think a lot of times developers use the future developer as a way to get more time or money to do what they need to do.
Right. Right.
So that they can feel a sense of personal satisfaction about their work.
Mm-hmm.
And so they say, like, give me more, like, yeah, this could be a, you know, like a 4-hour task, but I think we should treat it as a 16-hour task because maintainability, future developer, blah, blah, blah. And like, maybe it doesn't need to be a 16-hour task and, you know, hashtag no estimates and all that. But like, in that sense, like, they're appealing to the future developer as a way to use the language of value and capitalism to explain to a product owner why they need to take pride in their work. So there's like this weird aesthetic exchange that happens where, like, I think developers often have like a lot of aesthetic pride in their work.
Mm-hmm.
And to reach the aesthetic that makes me feel like I can go on living, I need to exchange some of my soul for the lie of the future developer convince a product owner.
Yeah.
And that's like a very like down and dark like Marxist critical theory analysis of the project management triangle, but it is what it is.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think that makes sense to me. I think that certainly at least that is something that happens. I don't know if that is purely my motive. Like
that's definitely not like the only reason people write good code or like the only
Like, there's something, and I feel like with all these discussions, we have to keep bringing them back to actual decisions that we make. So,
well, and that's the thing. It's like we keep trying to make these general rules about things. And it's like, oh, it's kind of a case by case basis,
right? Yeah, stupid case by case basis. Oh, yeah. So, example. Yesterday, Okay, so over the past like week, I implemented one, like, it's a state picker. So it's like a multi-select element where you can, like, select a state. And it's for one section of the site.
Wait, like states in the union or, like, status?
States in the union.
Okay, like Alaska and Arkansas.
Yes. Yeah, Arkansas. Okay, that's part of the interesting problem of a state picker is Arkansas, if you search AK... Well, I guess Arkansas is just the one that I happen to like use as my example for this. But, you know, search AK, like multi-select won't show you Arkansas, you know, if you're searching the acronym, like some acronyms actually work. Like, what is the acronym for Delaware?
DE.
Right. So DE works. Arkansas doesn't work. Yeah. So there's ones that don't work. So anyway, like that was part of this problem was including. So whatever. So there were two places in there was one place in the app. I had to build a state picker. There was another place in the app that already had a state picker. The new place in the app, the requirements were, okay, we want to select all states button. We want to reset states button. We want to include the abbreviations in the label. We want them to be searchable by the abbreviation and the thing. So all these requirements, right? And then the old state picker didn't get any of that work. So now this week, the product owners are going through all this stuff in like QA and they're like, so the other state picker is now inconsistent with the new state picker. Even though the new state picker has some things we don't want in the old state picker, we want to like bring all the state pickers up a notch. So their like requirement was like, well, whatever, we don't have to get into that. But the point is so I'm sort of left with this decision is like, I could very easily add a select and a select all and a reset link to the old state picker because it's just a view, you know, yes. You could picture it super easy. Or I could create an abstraction where I have an abstract base level state picker that contains some of the complex, because there is some complexity that is duplicated that is kind of gives me the heebie-jeebies, but whatever. Like because you kind of have to write your own searching algorithm to search by the searching algorithm. That's a really fancy word for like a regex expression for two fields.
Yes.
ye
old regex algorithm.
Exactly. The kind of regex that then. You actually write no regex. Like it's literally uh-huh. just slash the query slash. Uh-huh. So that's the level of algorithm we're talking about. So anyway, I'm left with this. It's a classic decision of like, do you abstract or not? Do you prefer the duplication over the abstraction? You know, whatever. It's this decision, but it's like, this may be even just too obvious of a place to just start in, but it's like, what are the implications there? Like I want to talk like on a deep level, like what does it matter if I just add the temporary fix? You know, like how do you, I could see the utilitarian like debate of like, well, why don't we actually try to quantify the cost of this thing? Like the cost of somebody having the cost of like being inconsistent down the road. You know what I'm saying? There's just,
yep.
I think it's easier I think it's harder than it seems, you know?
Because you don't know what features are going to be requested in the future, right? So it's impossible to say, like you could make like a curve, right? Like you could theoretically plot a curve that says like, you know, like if we create one state picker in the future, then this saves us this many lines of code or, you know, whatever. And if we create five of them, it's this. And if it's 10 of them, it's this. Right. And then you can kind of create a curve that obviously will like slope intensely upwards because it's exponential growth. But why? Right. Like why? To me, it's why. Why do you want to do this?
Right. Yes. Yep.
Cause it seems like, if I may, right. We developers are very used to automating processes, right? Mm-hmm. And anytime we do a process a bunch of times, we think, could I automate this?
Yes. Yeah.
Right?
Right.
I think your life is pretty good and automated, and like you're pretty good at like most of the repeated tasks in your daily life, right? And you've now come up against a situation where you are now trying to automate your own brain because that is the next logical thing for you to automate.
Yeah, that is what I want. Yes.
Right. And so you're like, well, and it is valuable, right? Because like every step of tooling and automation that you insert, it frees up more of your brain space to like operate on a higher plane, right? So if you're ever going to become the Buddha, you have to automate,
totally,
you know, decision making about code duplication.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's like the hardest one that I just picked, but for real, like that's the problem is how many times do you reach this problem where do you prefer the duplication? Or, you know, like, and there, I know there are general rules out there, but like, you know what I'm saying? Like you come across this thing in such
case by case basis.
It's okay. Exactly. Like that's what I'm trying to kill is the case by case basis. The case by case basis is what kills us. And I really should do a better job of measuring.
Why does it kill? No. You have to justify to me that a case by case basis kills us.
The case by case basis kills you. Because you have to think, you know, okay, this sounds so simple. I feel like there's something I'm missing here that the thought that goes into those case by case bases, one, the thought processors are generally inconsistent because you're not, I don't know, you don't have the tools to like link the context as well as often, but let's assume you did. You're like trying super hard and you get tired and it takes time. And you get bogged down and you look at Twitter and you have these big things to contemplate and you're not in a good mode to contemplate because you're programming. You're not taking a walk or
so
taking a shower,
why,
you know?
This is why not factories. This is why like design patterns and module design is really appealing, right? Because it's like,
right,
you
yes,
have these,
yeah, for sure.
You have these sort of patterns.
Yep.
And like, even like, you can turn those patterns into snippets and all of this other stuff, right? Like, or like scaffolding, like you can automate these things. And so you kind of get in this 80-20 situation where like even when something's not exactly the right thing, if it's good enough and you have like an automated system to do it, you'll reach for that because the amount of energy you would insert into the decision making isn't worth it. Just do the thing that like makes the most sense, right?
Right.
And I think this is a thing. So like if you talk about I'm gonna forget what it is. There's a scale of mastery that exists. Mm-hmm. I think it's like Dewey's scale of mastery. It might be Dewey or mm-hmm. something like that. I'll look it up and put it in the show notes. Okay. But basically, there's the idea that like there's like a novice, an advanced beginner, intermediate,
yep.
advanced intermediate, expert and master or something like that. Mm-hmm. What it has to do with is pattern matching and like having seen things before and being right. able to pattern match things to them loosely with some sort of an algorithm or a regular expression where basically like in any one of like a million cases, you can put it through its paces on a case by case basis and then you're off to the races.
Yep.
So you are able to sort of see, you know, oh, like this type of, like, for example, like, okay, this is an input, right? This is a form input that has like a lot of logic behind it. Well, I haven't specifically built like a state selector before, but I can think back to other times when I've built like complex form inputs.
Right.
Right. And I know that in those cases, sometimes I ended up using those, 50 times throughout the application, and sometimes I literally use them once. What were the differences between those? Well, like probably the difference is like what type of data is it, right? So it's like, okay, well, this is part of an address field, right? And it's like, okay, well, what kind of application is this? How often do we enter like shipping and billing addresses?
Right. Yeah, just more information.
Oh, we enter.
So you're
like
saying
every user.
Go ahead.
But you can like pattern match, right?
Right.
So you can, your brain is doing all of that, but you'll be able to look at this and say like, okay, this is a form field for the primary business logic of the app. This needs to be abstracted, right? And like your brain will almost get to the point where you're like, state field abstracted, you know?
Right. Yep.
And like it's all pattern matching and skipping steps, right?
I don't think you can
write that down as a flow chart. You know,
I think the flow chart would take so much time. I hope that you can. I fear that if you're not thoughtful about your work, I guess in general, I fear that if I'm not thoughtful enough, I will lose time, you know, like over time, like all of these things could just pass me by. I don't know. I've been posing questions on Twitter.
Wait, what things could pass you by?
This knowledge, the experience and I read books. This is something that John Van and I also connect on is that like, so when he reads, he writes down notes for everything. Because mm-hmm. like he's basically reached this conclusion that if it's a sad reality in his life, and I completely identify with this, that like all the books I have read, most of them mean nothing to me. I don't remember them. Think of like I grew up, you know, in the church going to sermons, like services. How many sermons have I listened to and how many do I recall? You know, like, and you could say that, well, over time they transformed you and they spurred thoughts and like those over time transformed you. But basically like I lose so much, and if I'm not thoughtful, and I don't know, I'm scared that all of this, all of these experiences would be in vain if I don't write them all down. But I also have hope, like that you could develop patterns, exactly. But they're like just a decision making framework for any decision. Like, so I've been posing these little micro decisions on Twitter. I've only done like two, but like in Vue.js, they happen all the time. It's freaking ridiculously crazy to me how simple mm-hmm. Vue components are. But how many decisions are involved in those components? It's mind-blowing to me. The simple, like, do you indent? So you have in your single file view component, you have your template tag, your script tag, and sometimes your style tag, right?
Sure.
Do you indent, yep. in your script tag, do you indent your export default and then subsequent lines? In your template tag, do you indent your first root element? And your style tag, do you indent all your CSS styles?
The answer is yes. You indent all of those things.
The answer is yes. So what I've come to, the decision I've made, is that the answer is, and this is pretty much what I was doing before, but I wanted to sort of get the feels out, and Keith does this, and I think Matt does this, and I think like Jason Varga from Wilderborn does this. Basically, template tag you indent, script tag and style tag you don't indent.
Wrong.
Tell me why it's wrong. Let's explore this decision. Tell me why it's wrong.
Because it is nested further than the tag.
What do you mean?
Because the tag wraps around the content.
Okay, right.
And it's on multiple lines, so you indent it.
Right. Okay.
That's all. That's all there is to it.
So you're saying that this is a... You're saying that, like, it's a block. Like, it's... what about, like PHP? Like, when you open a PHP file and you write...
Yeah, it doesn't have a closing tag. Doesn't count.
Okay. Class. You nest class. There's got to be an example of something that's not, like, explicitly, like, a block.
The only one is EOT, and that's because of stupid PHP. Can't ignore white space.
Right. That is such a bummer. I hate that.
yeah. No, everything else, you just indent.
Yeah. So,
if it's between two matching things and it's on multiple lines, you indent it. That's
outside
all
of view components, when you write a script tag, like, let's say when you would have the little, like, thing at the end of your blade files that's, like, the scripts push thing, append scripts thing, do you... Mm-hmm. Okay, when you have a blade file, you have your at layout at the top, or at extends, whatever. Then you have your at section. Do you indent inside that at section and at end section?
100%, yes.
You do?
Yes.
Okay, and then if you do an at appends or push scripts, and then do you indent the script tag inside of that?
Probably, if it's on a separate line.
I'm calling BS on that. I bet you don't.
I don't know. I haven't written Blade in a really long time.
I think that would look weird as hell. I don't think anybody does that. I know, I haven't written Blade in a while either.
I think it's weird.
But
I haven't written Blade in a while.
Anyway, yeah, there's something that goes into that decision. And so I sort of, like, it emerged as, like, the I don't know what it is about it. I don't know why I'm so aligned with that decision, that indent in the template and not in the script and style. And so this morning I started questioning that and going, like, why do I think that's a higher level of, like, of decision being made? You know, is it just because it defies consistency that I think it's, like, nuanced and attractive, and then that's the thing that I'm going to do because I have a good reason for, like, to identify the nuances, you know? Yeah, I don't know.
So what'd you come up with?
I want to know if any of it matters. And if it doesn't, why am I not being purposely inconsistent because nothing matters?
Nothing matters.
Like,
none of it really matters. In the long term, all of this code is going to disappear.
Right. I guess what I want to do is
prove
that it matters.
You'll be writing different code in 10 years. Well, no, but here's the deal. Like, the only reason it matters to exactly three people, right? It matters to you, it matters to the client, and it matters to the future developer, right? The mythical future developer.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter to anyone else unless you are turning this into, like, advice that someone else can take and apply to their themselves, their client, and their future developer, right? So it's like, because you are a person who's on Twitter and has, like, hot tweets and stuff, your decisions carry a little bit more weight because you're going to tweet about them and someone else might implement them, right?
Okay.
So you're not just affecting your own code, you're also affecting theoretically other people's codes if they take you seriously enough to implement your things.
Okay.
So because of that, I think you might have a little bit more, like, existential weight to your decision-making process because you're carrying the weight of the world on your tweets. but, like, realistically, like, your wife doesn't care if you indent your things, right? The people who love you in your life don't care about your indentation, right? Mostly your coworkers, like, while they have opinions, don't think more or less of you as a human based on your indentation style, right? The only person who really is, like, going to be deeply affected by your indentation choice is you, and maybe whoever reviews your code if it's Matt, because you might, you know, or Keith. I think Matt and Keith have stronger opinions on this, right? To me, it's just, like, consistency. Like, do the same thing everywhere. Like, don't make me think.
Right? The consistency, but that you come into, like, here's a good example of where consistency is actually a trade-off. So you're writing an app and you have a view, you know, or a blade file, right? It's just a normal form that posts to a Laravel endpoint route controller thing, right?
Go, yes.
And so you do a, you have a big form, and then you do some sort of like post colon colon create in the controller that handles that form, and you have request only, okay? Like in that...
Wait, you have post colon colon create in the form and what?
And then you have request only or whatever it is now. I think it's all right. Is behaves like only. And then you pass in all the fields that are in the form.
Yes.
And now you've created your post, right?
Yes.
Okay. So.
Yeah. I mean, SQL injection aside, yes.
Well, you wouldn't worry about that in this instance, right? Because it's all okay, sanitized and escaped and whatever the words are. So in your form... Let's say you have a field called post, I don't know, created at or something. That's so dumb because that's a timestamp. Why can't I think of a two-word field? Give me a two-word field.
Is admin.
Okay.
That's a user.
Okay. Right.
Has gallery. There you go.
Has gallery. Okay. So you have a has gallery field in your database that's Boolean.
Sure.
Right.
Yep.
On the front end, so on the back end, you snake case all your database stuff, right?
Uh-huh.
So your field is has underscore admin. Or yep. Has, what is it? Has gallery.
Gallery.
Has underscore gallery. On your front end, in your blade, you have has hyphen gallery. If you're being consistent with your how you, the, you know, the casing for attributes in HTML, right? Like all attributes in HTML, you hyphen kebab case, right?
Sure.
Right. So now you have this problem where if you decide to be consistent, you have the incoming request has hyphen gallery, but the field you're putting into the database in your Eloquent model has underscore gallery, right? So you have to do that conversion in your controller. One, you could argue that somehow this would be problematic because someday, somewhere, you would miss this thing. Or you could just say that it's extra lines of code and it's more to grok and think about. But I guess what I'm saying is if you remain consistent, you lose something. You lose the clean, sleek ability to be able to just do post, create, request, all, and then your stuff, you know?
Yeah, but you did a sneaky maneuver there, right? And like, okay. I'm not sure exactly which logical fallacy this is.
Oh,
but what you
give it
did
to me. Give it
took,
to me. I'm the master of logical fallacies.
You took a lovely conversation. You know what you did? You did fallacy of the beard. You know that fallacy of the beard?
Maybe no.
Fallacy of the beard is basically like when does so there's a clean shaven person, right?
Right.
And then after a certain amount of time, there's stubble. Right.
Okay.
And then after another certain amount of time, there's beard. Right.
Okay.
And so, fallacy of the beard basically says because there's no like hard line of demarcation between like having a beard and not having a beard, they'll basically like use that fact to like push beardness all the way down the chain until like a clean shaven person has a beard.
So consistency is the beard.
Right. Exactly. So what you've now done, right, is you've taken a conversation about like indentation and like formatting and code style, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you've turned it into like we're now talking about functionality,
right? And that's
right?
Fine. I want to go
not,
there,
but I know you want to go there. But I'm just saying you can't take my rule that says like always be consistent with your you indent things.
All right.
Or how you
well then I'll have to formulate an argument that styling is married to functionality and you can't divorce the two. That at
okay,
some
but white
level,
space
like,
isn't in PHP. And we were talking about white space, right? White space is not functionally relevant in PHP.
Yeah.
So
I don't know. Yeah.
You
okay.
can't have that, are you? You know what I'm saying?
Right. I don't know. I feel
but like if you want to talk about like capitalization and kebab case and snake case, like we can do that, but I think that's a totally different
but
thing.
Wouldn't
which is
you
like
in general, you would think that kebab case and snake case and stuff, those are styling decisions, but they have functional implications that you. You know?
Yeah. You know why? You know why? It's because it's because of style guides. That's why. The word style guide, I think, has like inflated the usefulness of the word style.
What do you mean by that?
Well, because we write all this functional stuff in code style guides, and maybe it should be in style guides.
Oh,
but like,
I see what you're saying.
You right. know, like I feel like you should have like a
style and functionality,
right? Like a formatting versus functional style guides.
Right. You know? And the thing is, I don't know if, yeah, I don't know. I'm stuck on this instance where the two are not divorced. They're married. Like something as
we are
so
not the
styly.
Same. I am a Martian. Carry on. Sorry.
No. So anyway, I don't know. I'm looking for enlightenment. I'm looking to identify things. So yesterday I was like, I clicked on some like Google knows I'm a developer, so they give me these like crappy like generic articles about development, and every once in a while something interesting like slips in there.
Uh-huh.
And
yep.
I don't know if you've ever heard of this. It's called CWE. I don't remember what it stands for. It's basically like the most common, it's like a list of all the common programming errors, like the mistakes programmers
like
make.
That.
And so I was like, ooh, this is interesting. So I looked, there's like a top 25 list, and it's grouped by like resources, like resource allocation stuff, by like...
Is number one attempting to automate their brain out of existence?
No, no, it's not even on the list. But one of them is not hiding, or one of them is not hiding passwords, like in a secrets file or okay. an environment file, you know? And
sure.
so like that, yeah. that's such a simple thing that we know is bad, but every so often it hides itself, or, you know, like I've committed something to GitHub where I've gotten an automated, like I told you about that. There was like this,
yeah, yeah.
this like,
you stuck your AWS key somewhere.
Yeah. My AWS key was on GitHub, and somebody had a bot that checked for him and was sent me an email. Was like, dude, I'm doing this cause I'm a good guy. Take it down. And
yeah.
so I did.
And
so anyway,
yeah.
so I mean that stuff happens. Like how many code bases have you worked on where passwords were not in environment or secret files? Like, probably a decent amount. Like,
yeah.
You know,
not since I've been here.
Right.
Yeah.
Not since I've been here either, but other places for sure. That definitely
yeah.
happens. So anyway, I'm like, yeah, like there are probably, and I started reading through them. I was like, yeah, these are all things that if I like, what I want is posters all over my wall. I want a all the errors I can make poster. I want an
okay.
I want all the code smells poster and their refactors
yes.
poster.
Yes.
I want
yes.
the design patterns poster.
Yes.
And then I want my decision-making tree poster.
Okay, Caleb, I will allow you to own all these posters if and only if you, for each poster, you get a little mini poster of Jeffrey Way and you put it next to it and you take some quote from the Laracast snippet where he says, none of this matters, it's not that big of a deal.
Well, which snippet is that?
Oh, it's all over. He says it all the
right,
time.
Right, right. Well, what does he mean... What does he mean by that?
What he means by that is don't take these rules that people create and come up with and write little blog posts about so they can get a little bit of Hacker News traction.
Right. The rules
and turn them
are
into
the,
your conscience.
Right. But those are the don't do this because it's bad. They're not the like evaluate this thing based on like reason. You know?
Yeah, sure. But I'm just saying if you're going to get like a bullet pointed list of code smells on your wall as a poster. Like,
I think that's,
you know,
a totally legit poster. So I could be like, oh, well, no, you're right. Yeah, because
unless you also get a king size Sharpie, and then every time you realize one of them is bogus, you take your big Sharpie and cross it off.
You're hurting my feelings, D. Cole.
Someone told me that using object literals in JavaScript was a code smell, and. It was because someone had said that on like the ES 2015 website blog, and their reasoning was like it could be confusing if people thought it wasn't an object literal.
Mm.
Like, yeah, but that doesn't mean that you cut off your arm because it could be confusing if someone thought it was a
right,
leg.
Right, right.
Like, it's a very useful tool.
Wait, that was an instance where I started saying you're like, yeah, right, until you finished the statement, and I just revealed
uh-huh.
that I thought you were done. So I wasn't like lying and saying like, yeah, right. But like, cause you were
uh-huh.
like, oh, this is an insight. I was like, yeah, right. And then because you cut off your, you know what I'm saying? You ever do that? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
When you're like,
yeah,
when somebody's talking
your arm, yeah.
and you're like, yeah, you're right. But you jump the gun and then they deliver
oh.
the information that you didn't
and
have
you
when you said,
anymore?
Yeah, right. And then you're like,
yeah.
Well, do I go back and like explain like myself?
And retroactively, yeah, take away my,
I recant my, yeah. So
see, my thing is I say "oh hell yeah" a lot when I'm like nervous in a situation where someone's saying something to me. And so often, like, especially with like people on the street who yell at me, which happens more than you'd think, when I'm being yelled at on the street by someone who's like clearly having a rough day, I'll be like, "Oh hell yeah, man. Oh hell yeah." But then sometimes like they'll follow that up with like a very strong like political or societal opinion that I don't agree with. And then I'm like, I'm halfway through saying, "Oh hell yeah," because that's just my MO. And I'm
that, yes.
So yeah. Anyway, yeah. Life's hard.
Life's hard. Decisions, decision making. So we gotta crack this thing. We gotta crack it. We gotta apply all the same things that Socrates and Plato and Aristotle applied to the stuff we do every day.
Yeah.
So and we need to apply the stuff that they taught us in terms of discourse and arguments and debates. In our programming,
you know,
discussions.
What? Speaking of Socrates and Plato, I'll end on this. Is a primitive wrapper around an object literal in JavaScript a string because it has an inherent sense of stringness, or is it a string because of its properties that it can be read as a string and mutated as a string?
Wait, repeat that. Repeat it. Sorry.
Is a string, so say I have like a primitive wrapper around string.
What's a primitive wrapper?
Basically an object that extends string.
An object that extends string.
Right, so like...
primitive wrapper meaning an object that extends the string. Okay, gotcha.
Right, well, yep. Because there's no concept of extending in like vanilla JavaScript.
Right,
so
okay.
You have to create like an object who... uses the prototype
right.
of string.
Yep.
So anyway,
okay.
Is a primitive wrapper around string
mm-hmm.
a string?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
That's it walks the, like that's the a question. String. It quacks like a string.
Right, and so that is what Aristotle would say. Right. Aristotle would say that if it walks like a string, if it has all the attributes of a string,
right, right, it
then
is
a string.
You're right. I saw this in. This is another term John Van uses, pop scholarship. I've been like soaking up these crash courses on YouTube and School of Life and stuff.
Yeah.
And so I know exactly what you're talking about. I am in. Go on.
Yeah. So Aristotle says, you can count the number of characters in it. You can concatenate it with other strings.
Right.
You can do all the string based, you can regex it. You know,
right?
You could do all the things,
and Plato would say that it doesn't have
Plato
the
would
string
say,
essence, right?
Well, like, Plato would say, does it subscribe to the form of stringness?
Right,
right.
Mm-hmm, okay.
I would argue that extending that the prototype equals the form, right?
Right,
and that in JavaScript at least, that anything that uses the prototype and constructor of string is a string. For all intents and purposes.
But it also has other behavior,
however,
which is like, would muddy the form, right?
I feel like that would muddy the attributes more than it would muddy the form.
Okay.
But we'll see. Anyway, long story short, that was a big argument I had with some people in a Vue.js pull request because they were using type of instead of instance of to check whether things were strings, and that was breaking Ziggy when people were trying to use it in... view.
If it walks like a string, eventually. You know what they say.
If it walks like a string, concatenate it.
Yep, that's what they
that
say.
That dog gonna hunt.
Okay. Should we stop this train?
Podcast. I think we should stop this train. I think we should pull over. Can you pull a train over?
Well, you know, if I'm on a bridge standing next to a fat guy and there's a train going below me and Daniel's on the tracks, is it ethical for me to throw No, if the train is our podcast and it's headed towards loss of subscribers and I can...
I think it's very ethical. Throw me off the tracks.
Throwing you. See you, bud.
And a big shout out to Jared White for providing this music.